Court-imposed homosexual marriage at this stage of the debate will be an affront to our democratic principles.
We're here today because we have two kids, we're a family, and we would like to have the same protection under the law that other families have.
Marriage is a good thing for children, and marriage is a good thing for couples. We're simply asking for more of that good thing.
I want to celebrate in the chapel.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Canadian liberals join the wedding party while Israeli couples come over to try the cake, and a Supreme lawsuit tests Washington's state ban on marriage equality. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending March 12, 2005. Although Canada's ruling Liberal Party has been working hard to enact national marriage equality legislation this session, this week marked the first time that the party itself has endorsed it. The party's National Policy Convention overwhelmingly approved a resolution despite having rejected similar proposals at three previous meetings. All those resolutions were proposed by the party's youth group. The Young Liberals played on former U.S. President Bill Clinton's mantra with a slogan referring to Canada's Bill of Rights, distributing buttons reading, "It's the Charter, stupid." The Religious Right Defense of Marriage Coalition immediately responded to the Liberals' convention with a media campaign highlighting some cabinet members' past opposition to opening marriage to same-gender couples.
But four Israeli gay couples didn't wait for Canadian federal action, traveling to Toronto to marry this week. Court rulings have already established marriage equality there and in most of Canada's regional jurisdictions. Israel restricts marriage to couples who meet the standards of Orthodox Judaism, a requirement that excludes a number of heterosexual couples as well as gays and lesbians. The four couples, led by Tel Aviv's first openly gay city council member, Etai Pincus, and his partner of 5 years, are prepared to wage a long battle in Israel's courts to win legal registration of their Canadian marriages back home. Israeli courts have already extended equality to same-gender couples for a number of specific purposes, and some cases relating to marriage are already in progress.
Those Israeli couples could have married closer to home in the Netherlands, which pioneered marriage equality 4 years ago. This week in the Netherlands, three parliamentary parties unveiled a bill to remove the last difference between heterosexual and same-gender marriages, the right to adopt a child from outside the country. Very few children in the Netherlands are available for adoption by non-relatives, but most of the nations with many children needing homes object to adoptions by same-gender couples, and the Netherlands hoped to avoid international strife. The coalition bringing the new bill, along with two other parties expected to support it, reportedly represent a parliamentary majority. Justice Minister Piet Hein Donner said his government is willing to change the law if even one other nation would cooperate, but said that condition has yet to be met. Some partnered gays and lesbians in the Netherlands have already adopted foreign-born children as individuals, but that approach has created some legal problems, particularly regarding inheritance. And as the Netherlands' first gay couple to marry, Jos and Jarko de Witt van Leeuwen said at the bill's presentation, "We are a family, and we want to adopt as a family. We want to do this openly as gay parents." The proposed legislation would also make it automatic that lesbians have parental status for children born by their partners during their marriage. Currently, those non-biological co-parents must formally adopt those children.
The Netherlands' same-gender marriages have lately been controversial in one of its own dependencies, the Caribbean island of Aruba. After Aruba refused to recognize the marriage of a Netherlands lesbian couple, the Netherlands sent a parliamentary delegation, including the deputy prime minister, to discuss the issue. But last week, Aruba's own advisory council announced that its legal review found no requirement for the island to register the Netherlands' same-gender marriages, and also that no statutory claims could be made for those marriages since they could not be contracted in Aruba itself. On the other hand, the advisory council affirmed that gay and lesbian couples married in the Netherlands bear the responsibilities of marriage and its civil consequences regardless of where they live. The advisory council recommended a so-called free noting of the marriages in the Aruban registry. While that would not give couples such advantages of marriage as tax breaks or benefits from the Aruban government, it would, among other things, necessitate dissolution of the Netherlands marriage before an Aruban remarriage. Aruban judges could perform those divorces even though they cannot marry same-gender couples.
Divorce, though rarely in the foreground of the movement for marriage equality, is an important right. Brazil saw its first legal same-gender divorce late last month as a family court judge dissolved one of the state of Rio Grande do Sul's registered partnerships. Government attorneys tried to block the move on the grounds that it would imply that there had been a legal marriage. But Judge Roberto Arriada Lorea said, "To assign a differential treatment to homosexuals would be disrespectful to the principle of equality."
In the Netherlands, same-gender marriages have come to be about 8% of all marriages performed there, and their divorce rate also runs between 7 and 8% in government statistics.
Massachusetts became the first U.S. state to open marriage to same-gender couples about a year ago, and some of those couples began applying to divorce about 6 months later. Due to differences in record-keeping among the state's counties, exact figures are not available.
Canadian couples are still awaiting an overhaul of the federal divorce laws, although an Ontario provincial court struck down hetero-exclusive language to approve the first divorce of a same-gender couple in September, 15 months after the couple contracted one of the first legal marriages there. Last month, the Ontario legislature approved an omnibus bill to make the language in all provincial statutes inclusive of same-gender couples.
The irony of being able to marry but not divorce in most of Canada is heightened by contrast with the U.S. state of California, where this year's upgrade of the state's registered partnerships gave gay and lesbian couples the right to divorce, or at least the full-scale legal equivalent of it, even though they cannot marry there.
In the U.S. this week, two state legislatures moved to exclude gays and lesbians from marriage. A proposed amendment to Alabama's state constitution will go to the voters in June 2006 after winning final approval this week from 92% of the House of Representatives and 100% of the Senate.
A bill to amend New Mexico's marriage law to specifically define the contract as between a man and a woman this week won support from two-thirds of the state Senate after more than 2 hours of emotional debate. While none of the Senate Republicans opposed the measure, 40% of the Democrats approved it. This bill moves next to the state House, but a measure to create registered partnerships is stalled in a Senate committee.
However, two civil rights bills have passed floor votes in Hawaii. This week, the state House gave 88% approval to protections from housing discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity, while previously, the House unanimously approved protections from employment discrimination based on gender identity and expression. Neither has yet reached the Senate floor.
In Greece, legal recognition of same-gender partnerships has won an endorsement from a quasi-governmental advisory group. The National Commission for Human Rights called late last month for creation of legal same-gender partnerships with some of the benefits of marriage. The Commission's recommendations carry some weight, but are not binding on the Justice Ministry. The powerful Greek Orthodox Church has vigorously opposed legislative advances toward lesbian-gay equality, but the Commission emphasized it was concerned only with civil matters, not religious ones. There have been a number of widely reported scandals recently within the Greek Orthodox Church, including what's been called rampant homosexuality among its senior clergy who take vows of celibacy.
Norway's state church will be effectively headed by an anti-gay conservative following a vote this week by a sharply divided parliament. Ole Christian Kvarma was approved to serve as the Lutheran Bishop of Oslo only after a heated debate in which some opponents called for members to quit their church in protest. There was even division within the government of Prime Minister Kjell Magne Bondevik, himself a Lutheran minister, as openly gay Finance Minister Per Christian Foss was joined by another cabinet member in opposing Kvarma's appointment. Kvarma was the choice of the church's leading bishops, who have staunchly maintained that anyone in a Norwegian registered partnership cannot serve as a pastor. That's despite the fact that those partnerships are nearly identical to marriage and that employees of the government-funded church are civil servants. Kvarma replaces retiring Bishop Gunnar Salset, whose views are much more liberal.
Also appointing a new leader this week was the Human Rights Campaign, the largest national lesbian, gay, and trans political group in the U.S. Beginning next month, HRC's new president is Joe Solmanese, who has long worked with Emily's List, a political action committee raising funds for pro-choice women candidates for public office. HRC has been under interim leadership since the resignation of Cheryl Jakes after less than a year in the wake of U.S. President George W. Bush's re-election in November.
And finally, a recent attempt to purchase a team jersey from the U.S. National Football League's website was rejected because the buyer wanted it to bear the name of the Super Bowl champion Patriots defensive back Randall Gay. He's not the first NFL player with that name, but the server refused to take the order, responding with the message, "This field should not contain a naughty word." A gay man whose own last name is also Gay had a similar experience with the added insult that he was not allowed to enter the word in the online complaint form. Last week, an NFL spokesperson announced that the situation would be corrected and the gay jersey would soon be available. At last report, though, all that had changed was the website's message, now reading, "The personalization entered cannot be accepted." The Outsports website obtained a list of 1,100 words banned by the NFL, which also includes Jesus Christ.
That's News Wrap for the week ending March 12, 2005, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Rick Watts.
You're listening to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine brought to you by you. Your charitable donations keep this program on the air. We've produced some special CDs to say thank you to our supporters, featuring queer history, reviews of LGBT music, and behind-the-scenes looks at relevant movies and TV shows. You can also now get CDs of our regular program by subscription, and be sure you never miss a week of This Way Out. For all the details, please visit our website at thiswayout.org. You can also demonstrate your solidarity by taking part in an online benefit auction. Look for the This Way Out area at alternabid.com. Again, to find out more about special CD thank you gifts, subscriptions, and the auction, please do log on to thiswayout.org, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA.
As the U.S. Congress and many state legislatures work to cancel any constitutional grounds for marriage equality, the issue has risen to the pinnacle of another state's judicial system. The scene was the Temple of Justice in Olympia, Washington this week, and Ben Tabor of the Community Report on KAOS-FM witnessed the action inside and outside the courtroom.
On Tuesday, March 8, 2005, the Washington State Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the landmark Anderson v. King County case, which challenges the constitutionality of the 1998 Defense of Marriage Act, which created the state ban on gay marriage. Earlier that day, the group Washington Evangelicals for Responsible Government held an event called May Day for Marriage on the Capitol lawn. Preempting May by 2 months, and having nothing to do with the international commemoration of the 1886 massacre of striking U.S. workers, the event was aimed at showing opposition to same-sex marriage in Washington state. State troopers estimated that there were between 3,000 and 5,000 people at the rally. Amid the many handmade signs in the crowd, the most visible was a red and white placard reading, "Marriage is between a man and a woman." One of the many speakers that addressed the crowd was Reverend Joseph Fouten, a pastor from Bothell, Washington.
Court-imposed homosexual marriage at this stage of the debate will be an affront to our democratic principles and the right of the people to govern themselves through their representatives.
Sound the Alarm, an Edmonds, Washington-based Christian organization, helped to bring congregants from around the state to the event. Jacinta Tegman, executive director of Sound the Alarm, said her group mostly focuses on prayer to promote change, but on some occasions, like Tuesday, will encourage churches to take political action on issues.
The fact that marriage is in the state it's in is because the church hasn't stood up to provide an example.
When asked if it was difficult to engage churches or churchgoers in political activities like May Day for Marriage, Ms. Tegman said that some people are reluctant to get involved.
Sometimes when you talk about mixing religion and politics, people conjure up things of like blowing up abortion clinics or just being obnoxious in our presence. But as Christians, we have First Amendment rights as well. And basically, it's exercising those rights to express our values.
Across the street was a small group of gay rights supporters. They held a rainbow-colored banner with "Hooray for Gay" spray-painted across the front. Sarah DeLelio, who identifies as a lesbian, said that she doesn't have any problems with the May Day for Marriage event. However, she is hopeful that the Supreme Court will strike down the prohibition on gay marriage.
It's good that they have their opinion, but we have rights too. You know, I want to get married someday. And just because that's not to a man, that doesn't mean I shouldn't be able to do it.
By 1 p.m., a huge group of people gathered on the steps of the Temple of Justice where the Supreme Court was to hear the case. At first glance, it was difficult to distinguish one group of protesters from the other. People holding signs with anti-gay marriage messages seemed to be intermingled with rainbow-shirted students. Denny Steele, from Olympia, stood at the top of the courthouse steps. She and a group of other women dressed entirely in white surveyed the crowd. Miss Steele, a member of the Quaker community, was working to keep things calm and nonviolent.
I volunteered to act as a peacekeeper today to try and diffuse any conflict, to try and keep everything peaceful during the day.
She said that with one exception, where a man was harassing a group of people, things had moved smoothly. From a higher vantage point, it was possible to see that the plaintiffs, the 19 same-sex couples suing the state for the right to marry, were between supporters in the middle of the crowd. Brenda Bauer, represented by the American Civil Liberties Union in the case, said she wanted her family to be officially recognized by Washington State.
We're here today because we have two kids, we're a family, and we would like to have the same protection under the law that other families have.
Miss Bauer had optimistic expectations for the hearing ahead.
What I'm hoping is that the judges will ask insightful questions and come to a clear understanding that we're being treated differently as a group of people under the law than other people, and that that's not constitutional.
The Washington State patrolmen, dressed in their baby blue uniforms, opened the doors to the Temple of Justice just after 1 p.m. The long ranks of lawyers from both sides of the argument filed into the courtroom, followed by the plaintiffs. Although only five attorneys would argue the case, there were more than 20 in attendance. At 1:30, Chief Justice Jerry L. Alexander called the court to order.
Supreme Court,
you may be seated.
For the most part, the justice rigorously questioned attorneys representing both sides of the issue. While Darren Carnell, one of the attorneys representing the state of Washington, argued that homosexuals do not constitute a, quote, suspect class or require special protection under law because of discrimination, he was challenged by Justices Bobby Bridge and Barbara Madsen.
And we don't dispute, and have never disputed, that there's a history of some of discrimination against gay men and lesbians. But we'd submit that discrimination doesn't necessarily give rise to a suspect class. Courts have historically been very hesitant to find new suspect classes, and have ordinarily found suspect classes where there's a history of invidious government-backed discrimination. Slavery is the obvious example, and internment camps might be an example.
Sodomy laws?
Yeah, we concede that there's...
We have hate legislation, which was apparently passed because there was animus and it was acted upon.
During her argument, Patricia Novotny, one of the attorneys representing the couples, was thoroughly questioned by Justice Susan Owens. Justice Owens asked why the plaintiffs sought full marriage rights instead of a more feasible domestic partnership under state law. Novotny responded with this statement.
Yeah, let me say this. I think we have learned the hard way that separate is not equal. That is, when you say to a certain class of citizens, you're doing, you know, all the same stuff, but we want you to do it in this other railway car, you have labeled them with a badge of inferiority. And I think when the state does that in particular, and sociologists will tell you, that creates an atmosphere of permissive prejudice. some people will act on that prejudice. It basically says to you, second-class citizen.
Attorney Paul Lawrence of the Washington State American Civil Liberties Union followed with an argument on the same point.
In addition to making the separate is never equal conclusion, which we have learned and would apply because this is a suspect class and would apply because this is a fundamental right, if you are left with a situation where the only distinction is marriage versus civil union, marriage is only based then on one conclusion. That is a moral disapproval of same-sex couples. That's the only potential basis that exists to distinguish when you've taken everything else away. And we know on a constitutional and state law basis that moral disapproval alone is never sufficient under any standard to justify discrimination or classification.
After responding to a comment from Justice James Johnson, Mr. Lawrence continued his argument.
What the evidence shows in this case is that marriage is a good thing for children, and marriage is a good thing for couples. We're simply asking for more of that good thing. We're asking to get more people access to marriage.
After brief closing arguments by the state attorneys, the hearing ended. Like any other court proceeding, there was no indication on how the judges might rule. It could be weeks before a decision is reached. Following the hearing, Julia Sheridan with her partner, Emily, both of Seattle, thanked Attorney Novotny for her efforts in the case. Miss Sheridan, who served in the Marines until she was attacked by a male soldier and became disabled, said that she felt especially entitled to equal treatment under the law.
My father served in the Marines, my uncle served in the Marines, my grandfather and great uncle served. I've earned my spot to be treated equally and fairly, and my partner, whoever that is, ought to receive the same benefits as any other person who's given their limbs to the service of this country. I feel like I deserve to be treated equally and fairly under the Constitution because I earned that right in every way, shape, and form.
It's not clear if the state Supreme Court decision will have any impact on how the Federal Veterans Administration distributes benefits. However, if the court chooses to strike down the Defense of Marriage Act, it may be an indication that attitudes are changing here in Washington. I'm Ben Tabor in Olympia.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Rick Watts, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, Martin Rice, and Ben Tabor contributed program material. Thanks also to J.D. Doyle. Mark Mercer sang Chapel of Love from his album Nothing Like It, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. This Way Out is supported by charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Please visit our website to learn how you can help keep this program on the air. And so you don't miss a week of This Way Out, to find out how you can subscribe to audio CDs of our program. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on 4NAG Yeppoon, Queensland, Free Radio Asheville, Asheville, North Carolina, KHEN Salida, Colorado, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we know you'll be staying tuned.